Welcome to Friendship with God with our Bible teacher, Tom Cantor. Today's message and previous messages can be listened to or downloaded for free at friendshipwithgod.org, friendshipwithgod.org. You can also obtain free resources from Tom Cantor and view our online bookstore at friendshipwithgod.org or call us at 800-247-3051, 800-247-3051. Tom Cantor also has a daily devotional verse that comes out each day by email and on Facebook. To receive this small daily devotional verse that Tom Cantor puts out, you can sign up at friendshipwithgod.org, friendshipwithgod.org, or find Tom Cantor on Facebook by searching for Tom Cantor and Friendship with God. Now here is our Bible teacher, Tom Cantor.
He hath brought in Hebrew unto us. You know what she's saying here? She's blaming that worthless, no good, mean, foolish, inconsiderate husband of hers is responsible for everything that happened. What's this show us? She despises her husband. She hates her husband. And now we're going to see that her goal is to hate her husband, is to hurt her husband that she hates. She never loved Joseph at all. She just hated her husband, and if she could have an affair with Joseph, that would hurt her husband, and then she'd feel that she was the winner. Furthermore, she saw that her husband loved Joseph. Her husband, Potiphar, loved Joseph. So she hates what her husband loves, so she hates Joseph. So if from her lies that she is telling here, and it was likely that Joseph would be executed, if from her lies Joseph would have been killed, which normally would have been, that would have been fine with her because she hates what her husband loves. And you notice in verse 14, as we've been pointing out here, how she's referring to her husband. He's just he. You know, it's like he. She can't even bring herself to, certainly not going to call him my husband. She doesn't say, you know, my husband. She's not going to say that. And she's not going to even say Potiphar. His name, instead of just he, you know? It's Proverbs 6:26 all over again. Proverbs 6:26, the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Show me an adulteress, and I'll show you a woman who hates men. Potiphar's wife was out to destroy Potiphar and Joseph, which is seen in how she even refers to Joseph. She doesn't call him the Hebrew servant. She doesn't call him, rather, Joseph. She doesn't call him by his name, just an Hebrew. And Hebrew, not even the Hebrew, just any. You know? And Joseph will always be known with this derogatory term in Egypt as a Hebrew. He'll never get away from this. He'll never get away from that title. It's a name of reproach to the Egyptians, as we will see in Genesis 43:32, when Joseph is second to Pharaoh. They set on for him by himself for food, and for them by themselves, the Egyptians and the Hebrews separated eating, and for the Egyptians, which did eat with him by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that's an abomination unto the Egyptians. Even after he's so highly exalted there, he's still a Hebrew, and he can't eat with them because that's an abomination for the Egyptians. Now, we just seen how the Egyptians were representing, we've just seen how the Egyptians were representing the Arab states in the United Nations when they brought this resolution to condemn the Hebrew state of Israel. And it was only after Mr. Trump called the Egyptians that they retracted their condemnation resolution, only to be taken up by, shamefully, by New Zealand. Of anything, you know, boy, don't eat New Zealand lamb in here. And Senegal. I don't know what you can get from Senegal, but anyway, that's what happened. So she accuses Joseph of trying to mock the Egyptians, mock in the sense of insult, treat them badly. Now, she didn't say that Joseph tried to mock her. What she said was, Joseph tried to mock us. It's the Hebrews against the Egyptians. In other words, she's pulling the race card. by saying this Hebrew, these Hebrews are trying to insult all of the Egyptians. Okay. Now, we don't know anything about that today. So anyway, that's me. All right. So she's saying that Joseph was trying to force any Egyptian female. So she made it sound like Joseph was against all the Egyptians, the Hebrews. Now, she said that she cried with a loud voice. That's funny. No one seemed to hear her loud voice because she didn't have it, but she claims to have cried it. Behind all this lie is this undertone of, how could my husband endanger my sterling moral purity? Right? How could my husband abandon me so that I have to stand up and protect my pure moral virtue? That's really what she's saying here. I mean, and now she has to explain how she ended up with Joseph's garment. So she conveniently leaves out the fact that it was in her hand because, you know, she saw it initially in her hand. But in her explanation, she doesn't say that in her hand. Instead, she says in verse 15, and it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me or by me and fled and got out. So she said that it was because she screamed that Joseph got frightened and left his garment there. I mean, she made it sound like Joseph had taken his garment off in his aggression and then forgot it when he fled. Now, we hear all this, you know, this whole thing, and we go, wow, that's some story that she's just made up. And, okay, but now the question is, what about Joseph? How is Joseph going to respond to all these lies against him? And what's so remarkable in this passage about Joseph's response is that there is no response. He doesn't say anything. And really, what could Joseph say? I mean, what could he really say now? If Joseph tries to defend himself, he's going to incriminate Potiphar's wife. And he's going to hurt Potiphar. You know, if he stands up and he says, no, she's a no good viper, you know, that you're married to. No, he doesn't want to hurt them because really he loves them. Really, he loves them. He's very appreciative to Potiphar, and he tried to correct Potiphar's wife, as we saw. So he's really in a dilemma. Joseph's in a pickle. What in the world is he going to say? And so he says the best thing he can say, which is nothing. And he says nothing. And sometimes the picture we have of Joseph here is conflicted. He's conflicted. He's going to be stands between, I got to defend myself and I don't want to hurt them. He's conflicted. And sometimes when we ourselves find ourselves conflicted, like Joseph was, silence says so much. Silence says so much. You know, not exactly, but it does remind me of when Netanyahu came to the United Nations to protest the Iran nuclear deal and to chastise the nations for being silent and not protesting this Iran nuclear deal. And he said in his talk there, he said, your silence was deafening. It was funny. Your silence was deafening. And then what he did after he said that is he didn't say a word. I think it seemed like an eternity. It was like 3 minutes, I think it was. And instead, he just was silent and he looked at everybody, you know. And did you remember seeing that? You look at it on YouTube. It's incredible. Now, his silence was deafening. And here, Joseph's silence was deafening as he chose not to defend himself and he wasn't going to harm Potiphar's wife and Potiphar. And that's the same way with the Lord Jesus Christ when he was on trial and he was being falsely accused, because he knew that to defend himself would have been to condemn the liars. And that was not why he was sent to earth. As he said in John 3:17, God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. And then he taught in Luke 6:37, condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you shall be forgiven. So like Joseph, the Lord Jesus remained silent during both of his trials. He's in his trial with the Sanhedrin, the high priest and so forth, and in Pilate's court. He's got two trials. And in both of the trials, it's recorded in Mark 14:60, in the Sanhedrin, and the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? What is this that these witness against thee?" So it was impressive that he didn't say anything. And then in the next trial with Pilate in Mark 15:4, Pilate asked him again, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? Behold how many things they witness against thee." So again, it was this silence that he was known for during his accusations. But if Joseph was silent, which he was, what was Joseph hearing deep down in his heart? Deep down in his heart, what was Joseph hearing at this time? Well, deep down in Joseph's heart, Joseph might have been hearing something like, "Boy, if Egypt is so full of hatred and vengeance, then there's a need for one man to show forgiveness and love. I'm the man." Yeah? And then he could hear in his heart, "If Egypt is so full of selfishness and lust, then all the more reason for me to do my best to remain pure and try to reach them with the hope that there is in a holy God. If Egypt is so full of lying and cruelty, then there's all the more reason for me to conquer these sins by being truthful and kind." Now, what's remarkable about Joseph is that he's been crushed by what Egypt did to him, and Joseph is going to wrongly go to prison. Not just prison. Do you read this here? It says bound in prison, and have that elaboration in the Psalms. They put him in his feet in irons that weren't the right size for him. It hurt him. Anyway, but we're going to see how Joseph is not crushed by what happened. And this is the great part about Joseph. This is the wonderful part about Joseph. I mean, we're looking right now at the beginning of a tremendous, tremendous pressure on Joseph. And he's not crushed. And he's going to encounter, and how do you know he's not crushed? Because if Joseph had become crushed, he would have sunk into a state of depression and despair. But in prison, Joseph is going to encounter two men who have dreams, and they're going to need to have somebody interpret their dreams. And what's going to be amazing to us is, again, Joseph's response. So if Joseph had been crushed by all this, and he was in depression, he was in despair, and these men come to him with dreams, he would have went, "Dreams? You've had dreams? Oh, I don't believe in dreams. Let me tell you something. I had dreams. They got me in a lot of trouble. I'm here because of my dreams." And he might have said to him, "I just put those dreams out of your mind. Forget about them. I had dreams about being a ruler, and you can see where I am. So much for my dreams coming true. Dreams don't come true. I wouldn't get involved with any dreams. I'm not going to interpret them. Sorry, boys." Now, that would have been reflective of a person who had really let the situation crush him if he had said that. In other words, if he had let his circumstances just cast him into this state of cynicism and depression. But he didn't allow himself to sink down into that depression over what happened to him. And this is really important for us to see about Joseph. Joseph did not let his circumstances of being falsely accused and put into prison drive him into this state of cynicism and depression. And the fact that Joseph will try and help his fellow prisoners with their dreams, it shows us that he was not afraid that their depression, because they were depressed, would rub off on him. He would say, "Listen, I've got enough of my own troubles. I don't need you. I'm not a psychiatrist down here." But he wasn't that way. It shows that Joseph still believed in his own dreams and that God was going to bring them eventually to realization. And because he still rejoiced in the Lord in all things, he's willing to interpret the dreams of these other prisoners. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting that when he became the interpreter of their dreams, without even knowing it, he enabled the realization or the fulfillment of his own dreams, because one of those men that he interpreted the dreams for told Pharaoh, "Oh yeah, there's a Hebrew down there. He's a successful dream interpreter." And if Joseph had let what happened to him here with Potiphar's wife and so forth drive him into depression so that he refused to get involved with anybody else's dreams, who knows? Maybe he would have died in the dungeon. We don't know. Okay, This was not easy for Joseph. This wasn't a piece of cake. In fact, at this point in Joseph's life, he is really described by the verse in James 1:2, which says, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he has tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him." Now, this brings up a question. We see this word in James 1:2, temptation. What is temptation? What really is temptation? Okay, let me ask you. Definition of temptation, what would you say? Okay, it's the outworking of our fleshly fallen nature. Okay, an urge, an inducement or urge to sin, to sin. Okay, good. All right, great. Anybody got anything else like to add to our lexicon here? Okay, good. So we're going to see what temptation really is in here. We see what temptation is right here with Joseph in his life. Joseph has been told by God through his dreams he's going to be a great ruler and his brothers are going to bow down to him. Now, because of how his brothers hated him and sold him into slavery, it doesn't look like that. Doesn't look like he's going to bow down. Doesn't look like God's promises are going to happen. Now, because of the false accusation leveled on him by Potiphar's wife, he's about to be thrown into prison. He's thrown into prison. He's at the lowest level of any human being. Doesn't look like anyone's going to bow down to him. So, when Abraham was called to offer Isaac in Genesis 22:1-2, what it says about that experience in Genesis 22:1, it says 1 and 2, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son, whom thou lovest, get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Now, what was the temptation there? It says God did tempt Abraham. Abraham was tempted. What was the temptation? I'm going to ask you. What was the temptation in that situation with Abraham? Abraham was tempted what to do? What was his temptation? Okay, not to trust God's promises, not to obey God. Now we're getting to now closer to an overall definition of temptation, because temptation is a challenge. It is a challenge to not believe in the reality of God and his promises. It's a challenge to the reality of God and his promises. See, for Abraham, it was, God is asking me to sacrifice my son? Is God real? You know, for Abraham, it was, God has promised that I'll have children, and now I am to sacrifice my only hope of having children. Are God's promises real? So all temptation is a challenge to the reality of God and his promises. That's our definition for temptation, a challenge to the reality of God and his promises. And what we see in Joseph is the temptation against the reality of God. I mean, Joseph's brother cast him into the pit and sold him as a slave. That's a temptation for Joseph because what happened was against the reality of God, who promised him that his brothers are going to bow down to him. When Potiphar's wife here has caused Joseph to land in prison, that's a temptation for Joseph because what happened to him was against the reality of God, who loved him and was with him. And temptation is anything that's against the reality of God. And temptation to sin is against the reality of God, who is holy, and without sin God is, and God judges sin. So looking at Joseph now, how could Joseph do what it says in James 1 again? My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. I mean, Joseph has no defense. He's got no defense against Potiphar's wife that he can do without hurting her and Potiphar. And all the men really seem to be against Joseph. You don't have anybody stand up and say, No, they're all willing to believe Potiphar's wife because, after all, you can imagine how these men are just a little envious. I mean, who is this guy? He's a Hebrew servant. All of a sudden, he's ruling over us. You know? And so how Joseph goes through these temptations is a lesson for us. First, we see the temptation, as you said, is that anything against the reality of God, which includes the reality of his love, the love of God, the reality of the care of God. That's the most important reason temptation is to be resisted. And it's to, temptation is to be viewed, as you said, behold, we count them happy, which endure. Really interesting that the word endure has the word E-N-D, endure. We're looking to the end. You've heard of the patience of Job. I'm quoting from James 5:11. Behold, we count them happy, which endure. You've heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and tender mercy. Now, when it says you've seen the end of the Lord, that doesn't mean that God has finished, you know, right? It means you've seen the end or the purpose of the Lord, what Joseph finally did. What Joseph realized is that God had a purpose in this temptation. Joseph probably felt as if he was in a pretty good position before this happened in Potiphar's house. He's thinking, this isn't bad. I mean, you know, I'm the top person here, and I have all these people who are obeying me. But one of the ends or the purposes of God was to put Joseph over all Egypt. And that meant that Joseph had to be taken out of the position in Potiphar's house. Now, maybe Joseph could have preferred that it not be via prison, but it's important for us to realize that God is in the upgrading business. He's in the upgrading business. He always has an upgrade for us. But before he gives us the upgrade, then, you know, and that's what's being we're looking at right now in the life of Job, in the life of Joseph, in the life of Job in James 5:11. Job was really in a pretty good position before all his troubles happened. But God wanted to bring Job to an even greater, better position, an upgrade with all those daughters. You know, anyway, okay. But first, I don't know, I don't have any daughters, it's okay. But first, God had to rip up Job's existing boarding pass. Have you ever been at an airport where they give you an upgrade? They say, can I have your boarding? Before they give you an upgrade, they say, can I have your boarding pass? And they rip it up in front of you. Go, oh, no, you know, I'm going nowhere now, you know, until they give you the new one. And oftentimes, there's a delay between ripping up the existing boarding pass and giving the upgrading boarding pass. I'm talking about with God. And that was the case here with Joseph and with Job. So the goal to keep in mind with temptation is the afterwards part, the afterwards part. In Hebrews 12:11, as it says, now no chastening for the moment seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. No trial for the present is a happy time, but afterwards it yields fruit. Now, this last week, I was speaking to a believer who's been diagnosed with cancer and is going to start chemotherapy, as a matter of fact, tomorrow. And he kept telling me on the phone, I can't believe this is happening to me. I just can't believe it. I just can't believe it. And I told him, you know, and I understood because I went through that. And I told him, you know what, looking back now, I'm glad I had cancer. I'm actually glad I had cancer because of what cancer did for me. It wasn't pleasant at the time, wasn't joyous. And David put it this way in Psalm 119:67. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now have I kept thy word.
Another wonderful day studying the Bible with our Bible teacher, Tom Cantor, here on Friendship with God. Don't forget that today's message and previous messages can be listened and downloaded for free at friendshipwithgod.org. You can also go online to find free resources from Tom Cantor and our online bookstore at friendshipwithgod.org. You can also find Tom Cantor on Facebook, and you can also go to friendshipwithgod.org to sign up for his daily devotional verse. Tom Cantor is also the founder of Israel Restoration Ministries. You can visit that website at israelrestoration.org. Or you can write Tom Cantor at P.O. Box 711-330, P.O. Box 711-330, Santee, California. That's S-A-N-T-E-E, Santee, California, 92071. Or you can email Tom Cantor at friendshipwithgod.org, Tom Cantor at friendshipwithgod.org. Or for more information about Tom Cantor and Friendship with God and Israel Restoration Ministries, call us at 800-247-3051. Sunday Night Church is back. Join Friendship with God Bible teacher Tom Cantor at the new Friendship with God Fellowship every Sunday night at 5:30 p.m. at the Creation and Earth History Museum in Santee, California. Join us early each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. for food and fellowship, with Sunday evening services to follow at 5:30 p.m. Watch Tom Cantor and the service on YouTube Live, located on the Friendship with God website. Enjoy encouraging teaching from our Bible teacher, Tom Cantor, in a relaxed and family-friendly atmosphere. Sunday Night Church is back, so join us at the Friendship with God Fellowship every Sunday night at 5:30 p.m. at the Creation and Earth History Museum at 10946 Woodside Avenue North in Santee, California. For more information, call us at 800-247-3051, 1-800-247-3051, or visit friendshipwithgod.org. That's friendshipwithgod.org for the Friendship with God Fellowship.